And I was looking to see, did those ancient alchemists have this idea? And when I dug really deep, I went back about 500, 600 years, and I looked at Germany, and I noticed something rather peculiar. Here are all these Christian alchemists. I don't know if they would call themselves Christian or not, but I think they would, because Christianity had pretty well overtaken Europe by this time. Martin Luther certainly had changed some of the basic shibboleths of Christianity, but nevertheless, Christianity was, I guess, the religion of Germany at that time. And I looked at what these ancient alchemists were dealing with, and they were always dealing with Hebrew symbols. I thought, were these people Jews in disguise and something like that? Why would they be using Hebrew symbols? And then I realized that these people saw these Hebrew symbols, which were referenced to something called Kabbalah, as actual alchemical symbols. So they saw them alchemically. It wasn't a religious thing at all to them. It was just simply, what are symbols we can use to signify the things that we are working with in our theories of transformation? Now, you might wonder about alchemists. You know, you picture an alchemical laboratory as kind of a dirty place and a lot of fire and smelting and melting and smelting. Oh, God, you know, a stinky place, and keep the kids out because, you know, there's molten metal flying all the place. And every once in a while, you see a king's messenger running into the laboratory saying, "We want more gold! We want more gold!" And, you know, that the guy's, "All right, wait, I'll get it, I'll get it." And the poor alchemist, he doesn't really want to change lead into gold. You think that's what he was all? He was interested in transformation of the internal, not the external. He was just doing that to keep alive. I mean, you know, a lot of people today that drive cabs in order to support their habits, whatever they happen to be. These alchemists were no different. They had to do what they had to do in order to keep alive. And that was, for the king, more gold, more gold, more gold. And for themselves, the secrets of transformation, the mystical underlying, the underpinning, which made all that even possible. Now, one thing I need to point out to you about these symbols, these Hebrew letters, you know, A is spelled A, B is spelled B, C is spelled C. In English, letters are letters. But in the Hebrew, Aleph, which is a letter, is also a word, and it's spelled Aleph, Lamed, Fe. And Beit, which is the second letter, is also a word. In fact, all of the Hebrew letters are words. But there's even more here. Every letter is also a number. Aleph is a number one. Beit is a number two. Gimel is a number three. Dalet is a number four, and so forth. And when we spell out each letter, we see that each letter is a combination of numbers. So the numerical as well as the literal significance of each letter word is important. And I'll be using some of that as we go on to explain how this all fits into the transformation of mind into matter and matter into feeling. So they were using these Hebrew symbols almost universally. I didn't find one of them that didn't recognize these symbols and use them. And the first symbol that they recognized was the symbol for the Hebrew letter A, which is pronounced Aleph, and it was the symbol of the void, that which comes into being from that which is without any being at all. Then I looked for the second symbol that they use, and the second symbol they use was the Hebrew letter Beit. And Beit is an interesting symbol because it represented not only the Aleph from which it came, so to speak, but it represented an action. This was the first action symbol. And what it did, when I first thought about it, I didn't quite get, but then I finally got to see what it was talking about. It represented limitation. It represented negation. It represented the action of stopping. It represented the action of setting a limit for something. It represents the containment of something. In fact, the Hebrew letter Beit, which is also a word, by the way, means house or container. And therefore, when you, for example, go to a Jewish temple, most of them, the first letter which denotes the name of the temple is Beit something. and it means house of. There's a temple in San Francisco near where I live called Beit Shalom, the house of peace. So house of or Beit represents that which contains peace. So you see, the Hebrew letter is Kabbalistic in the sense of what it does. It limits. It says inside of this there's going to be peace. Outside, we don't care. We're not interested. That goes back to the Aleph again. What we're only interested in finding here is what's contained within. So I began to look even carefully at what that all meant, and it came to me that even words were baits. Words are things that we create to limit our experience of the outside world. And after all, I say cat, a French person says chat, a German person says Katze, and we all are signifying the same thing, but they're not really the same word at all. They may look alike, but they're really different words. And these are limitations. In fact, even though they signify the same thing, and maybe we all see cats the same way, I'm not really sure if a French cat behaves like a German cat or like a Russian cat or like an American cat. Depends on how they're treated, I guess. But whatever they signify the particular structural way of signifying that animal for that particular language group. But Beit itself has them all. It is simply the symbolic act of limitation, creation. So all words are Beit. Beit also refers to something in quantum physics. It refers to the action of awareness. Because out of the Aleph, which is all possibilities, Beit limits and produces a limited set of possibilities. And that is what looks like to me the action of consciousness. So then I began looking at the third symbol. And the third symbol was Gimel. And that is the Hebrew letter G. Beit, by the way, was the Hebrew letter B. And they use the Greek form of the alphabet, alpha, beta, gamma, aleph, beta, gimel. By the way, alpha, beta, gamma comes from the Hebrew. I believe the Greek was derived from the Hebrew. At any rate, we have G, gimel, and gimel in Hebrew means camel. And what it signified was movement, movement. Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes out when you begin to study these letters in this kind of alchemical or Kabbalistic manner, and it has direct reference to what we mean by quantum physics. And now the movement that was being referred to here was something that would come into being as a result of an action of Beit. In other words, when Beit limited, it didn't just stop all action. A new action would ensue. New possibilities would arise. New things would start to flow. That's what these alchemical findings were showing me, and what I was beginning to reconstruct in the game of mind into matter was how to look at that from a mystical alchemical point of view. So far we've seen Aleph, Beit, Gimel. We've seen spirit transforming into limitation, which gives rise to new possibilities.